wonderful that you heard enough introduction about the measurement based model, so I can go quickly to the main result. But just to begin with, let me remind you, this is the latest quantum fashion. Just to impress you even more, these are all the papers appearing in our cloud during the last 6 months. So this is becoming boost from so many different angles, from the implementation point of view, from different models, different concepts. You saw it already in Richard Joseph talks. So what's new in the series of this is too long. What's new in the series of our talk papers that we did is a direct analysis. So in the same spirit that Hans was suggesting, that we don't want to understand this model in the circuit model, in terms of the circuit model. Of course, from fault tolerance point of view, you can translate from circuit to here, and whatever you can do there, you can translate algorithm back to here. But what we would like to do in order to understand this model, analyze this model, and play with this model directly. So some of these things, I covered them in my introduction, so I'm not going to go through them. The main thing that I'm going to talk today is about this determinism structure. Determinism structure and towards the concept of direct programming. Because at the end of the day, I'm a computer scientist. What I would like to do is to find a new algorithm by studying this model directly rather than translating it from the circuit model. Okay, so. Well, I just skipped the introduction, but what is measurement-based model? I'm sure all of you have already a feeling about what is a measurement-based model. But let me formally introduce the notation that I will use in my talk to make sure that everything is clear. So here is my formal notation. So the measurement-based model is a quantum Pac-Man, the way that you can think of it. So what do we have? So we have a graph, an entanglement graph. This is entanglement graph state. This is the part that Hans mentioned, that when you pick up your cluster state, you do the Z measurement, you structure it, and then you get a graph state. So, okay? So I have a graph state. Then some of the points with this rectangle are my input qubit that are sitting there. Some of them with this Y for your output qubit. So the other element in this game is that my Pac-Man, which are the single qubit measurement, then there is adaption, how to adapt the angle of their mouth to do the right measurement for you. So this is the single qubit measurement, and they're destructive. So the Pac-Man is eating all this extra ancillary qubit, and what you will end up is like this output qubit that you want to announce, and you need to do further poly correction. These are the red ghosts. So you do poly correction, and this is the measurement-based model. So that's what I'm going to work with. So now, informally, what are these commands? I mean, you have seen it, it's just a little notation to follow my talk. So we have preparation, which is preparing a qubit in the state class. We have measurement, a single qubit measurement, is XY measurement projecting to the state plus alpha minus alpha, which is this state we saw in Richard's talk, the state 0 plus minus e to the I alpha 1. Then you have entanglement, which is nothing except control Z. Then you have local correction. So in my tutorial talk, I show you there is some minor variation of this model by playing, changing the angle of measurement and changing the preparation, all of these things. Changing all of these elements, so you get a variation of this model. And since all of this variation of all these models are nothing except one-way model, so I'm just going to talk this one. So the theorem and the result that I want to show about determinism is for the one-way model, and the rest will follow. There was another structure, which again we heard about it, is a feed-forward structure. This feed-forward structure is this classical processing that you again heard about it. This classical processing that your measurement and correction can be dependent. But the only thing that I will need for this talk is just enough to look at the dependency of the correction. So I have a correction, which is okay. So you have correction, which either the value of this measurement is 0, so you don't do any correction, it's identity, or it's 1, so you do correction. So this is the only dependency we will look at. Okay, so these are my commands. I'm just quickly going through this. So what is a little program, a little pattern in this one? So you give the how many qubits your graph of state that I show you has, which part is the input part, which part is the output, and then you have a sequence of commands that you read them in Farsi from right to left. So let's look at a simple example. This is just another way of representing. You have two qubits, so my pattern is two qubits. The first qubit is input, the second qubit output, then read this. So prepare the second qubit in the state plus, entangle these two qubits together, measure the first qubit with angle zero, which is X measurement, correct the second qubit based on the result of, based on the result of your measurement. So if the measurement, when you're performing a measurement, you have two branches. Either you get the zero result or one result. If it's zero result, don't do anything to it. If it's one result, do the X correction. And this is nothing except implementing Hadamard. So this is the type of thing we're going to work with. So again, we saw that, and I showed you also in the introduction that this model is closed under composition, is a universal. Hans also showed you that. And another very nice property of that, this model, you have a little algorithm, we should call it a standardization, that when you write your plane with your command and this thing, you can always put them in this NEMC. Means that you do all the preparation first, then you prepare this entanglement, this graph of state afterward, then you do a bunch of measurement and then the correction. And this is the way I want to think about this. So what is the question of this talk is determinism. Okay? So what do I mean by determinism? I mean that somebody give my quantum Pac-Man to me. Okay. So given a graph of state, the first thing that is given to you is a graph of state. Somebody is giving a graph of state. The question is that how do I arrange this Pac-Man and the angle of measurement and the classical communication between and this correction such that at the end of the day I have a deterministic computation. With me, I'm sure you understand what I'm saying, but let me make it clear that each time that you make a measurement, you're getting two branches, yes? You're projecting to the plus alpha, you're projecting to minus alpha, okay? And the next qubit measurement, you're creating another two branches, and carry on. So then if you have n measurement commands, you have 2^n branches at the end of computation. So now a computation is deterministic if all these branches are the same. Yeah? So we say a computation is deterministic if all the branches at the end of your computation is the same. So now the question is that, is there any way that without doing this computation, I'm calculating all the branches from the pattern, from the structure of graph, I say that yes, this computation can be deterministic and write that computation. So is the question clear? So I'm given a graph. I know that I can play with this graph, and I want to know how to write deterministic computation. A little side effect that if I was going to do this with the circuit model, you know, stuck with the circuit model, of course, when I'm translating a circuit, which is implementing a unitary operator, that's a deterministic computation. So when it's come back there, just because I know I'm implementing that, I'm doing deterministic. But I said I want to forget about this circuit picture, so I want to play with this one. Is like towards the algorithm designing, towards the direct programming. How do I start with my graph, play with this thing, and I make sure that this is a deterministic computation? So this is the question that we're going to answer in this talk. And to do that, we define a concept. We're defining a function float, which is a very simple concept. I'll show you a picture later. But first, let me make you software and understand this notation. So you are given an entanglement graph, which some part of it is input, some part of it is output. So input output is specified. So it's like a geometry. You have G, some part EI, some part of it. And then we say that this entanglement graph, this geometry, has a flow. If what? If there is a function, this is a function from non-output qubit to non-input qubit. Think of it as qubit that I'm going to measure to the qubit which will never measure. Okay? So the flow function as from the qubit which are non-output means that all of them will be measured by my Pac-Man to the non-input means that the qubit that are that I have prepared, the qubit that I have prepared in the state plus. Okay? And now this flow function should satisfy two conditions. First of all, this assignment of I and f of y should be an element in my graph. So I should assign to each point in the graph another point which is connected to it. And there is a partial order, which is very interesting. I'll come back to this partial order, which satisfies this condition that f of I should be bigger than I, And for any k which is neighbor of f of I and is inside the graph, k should be also bigger than I. Is the mathematical definition clear? Okay, so let's see how do I define that. Let's move to example. So this is the graph. Okay? This graph is given to me. Somebody told me the qubit 1 and 2 are my inputs, so it means that they are given prepared to me. The rest of this qubit is prepared in the state class. Then I know that these 3 qubits are the output, these 2 qubits are the input, so it means all this black one will be measured, the white one will be announced. Okay? So this graph is given to you, and if this one has a float, the function that I was saying, yes, it has a float, and this is the float. So what is the float? Let's check one by one. For the qubit 1, which is a qubit that you're measuring, which is a non-output qubit, yes, then you're assigning a qubit 2. First of all, this f of I belongs, so this graph is there, so you're assigning this. And the same thing. Now, the second property was that you have a partial order. Oh, let's see if this partial order is here. The partial order was in at the assignment, so this is the partial order. This numbering is my partial order. The assignment of each qubit should be bigger than 1, yes, 2 is bigger than 1. And all the neighboring of 2, which is this qubit, and this qubit, and this qubit, the numbering that I get to them is also bigger than 1. Good, so for here we are done. Let's go to this qubit. The assignment to 2 is 3, which is bigger than 2, and all the neighboring of them, which is 4 and 3, are bigger than 2. And carry on. There's a very simple algorithm that how can we find this partial order, okay? And I'll come back to that one. But this is the partial order, just on the, before I go to the precise notation, this numbering is the depth complexity. So once you give the graph, the depth complexity that both Richard and Hans mentioned to that is this one. So for depth complexity of any pattern that you write, this one will be 4. So when you find the optimal partial order, this partial order is nothing except the dependency and adaptive computation that you're doing. I'll back to that one. So this graph has a flow, and we saw it. So how about a graph which doesn't have a flow? This graph does not have a flow. Why? So you have a graph like this. This is the input qubit, this is the output qubit. Okay, and now I want to construct my flow. By the choice from here, I don't have any choice except making my arrow to go to that output qubit. From here, I don't have any choice except going up. And now I have a problem, because this qubit should be in the future of that qubit, and this qubit should be in the future of that qubit. And so I cannot assign any partial order. And as I will show you later on, so there is no way that you can define a deterministic computation for that. I'm cheating a little bit, but I'll come back to that. So there are some graph which has a flow, there are some graph which doesn't have a flow. And a flow is a very semantic concept. So it's not a very physical concept, you can see, because it's depending on where I say is my input, where is my output. If I put this qubit to the output this one, then of course I have a flow. Okay, so now that we learned flow, this is what I want to show you, that if a graph has a flow, we can write a deterministic pattern. And we can check this one without doing all the computation. And we can write the program directly. How do I do that? So this is the determinism theorem. There are little notation that if you understand the proof, it becomes very, very simple. First thing, let's read this equation there. So if I have a measurement alpha, means I'm projecting to this plus alpha or the orthogonal to that minus alpha. If somehow I knew the result of this measurement before performing a measurement, so I'm acting a little bit like star for selection. I somehow knew the result of measurement. Before doing that, I could have applied a Z operator, which takes a plus alpha to minus alpha. And this is a completely acceptable mathematical equation. So Zi alpha, Zi, the Z gate, the Pauli Z, which is depending on the result of measurement that you will do in future, is nothing except projecting to the plus alpha. Okay? So keep that in mind. This is a mathematical equation, but of course you cannot implement, this is not a physical operator. I cannot apply operator which is depending on something in my future. Okay? So now, but this is a mathematical analysis. So what do I want to show you? That if you have a geometry, an entangled graph, a graph of space, with some part of its input, some part of its output, and you have a flow in that graph, then the following pattern is deterministic pattern. Okay? And what is this following pattern? Well, you have prepared your entanglement graph, then we do the measurement I with some angle alpha. Angle is not important for determinism. Then this is a series of corrections. So you see, this is the game that I already suggested. I want to start, put a measurement, and do the right correction, which I know at the end I will get the determinism. So how does this correction is written? You see the flow function. Correct Zk based on Si for all the qubits which are in the neighboring of Fi, and put an X on that. Okay? So this is a measurement of alpha. You choose to the arrow the place that is showing to you. You put an X correction there, and all the neighboring of that, you put Z. I'll show you a picture, and then it becomes much simpler. But first, let's do this algebraic. So this notation of algebraic manipulation is like it's become very useful to prove the theorem, but then you see a picture is the problem. And the way that I'm going to show you that this pattern is a deterministic pattern is just by showing that this is nothing except a bunch of projections. So I'm showing that this pattern, I just compute the positive branch of this. This pattern is computing this thing, which is deterministic, because projection is deterministic. So another way of reading this theorem is that, look, I know if I do entanglement and bunch of projection at a different place, then I'm getting a deterministic computation. But in reality, you cannot implement projection. Projection is not a physical operator. In reality, you can implement measurement. So, but then with measurement, we can compensate with some correction and make it back. So this is the game. I tell you, if you give me a graph which has a flow, how to change this unphysical pattern to a real pattern, to a pattern that you can run it. And this partial order is nothing except the way that your computation can be performed. So first, the proof is nothing except these three little equations, which is fascinating at how powerful they are. So first of all, as we saw that, doing a ZISI MI alpha is projection. But this is a bad correction in some sense. It's a correction that you cannot really perform because time in computation is going from right to left. I say that it's impartial, okay? You're reading first here and then there. So I cannot perform this correction, but then I'm lucky because I have entanglement, and entanglement is doing the transferring of this bad correction. If you have this bad correction and you have entanglement, you can rewrite it as this operation, which is xj, si, eij, and xj. Why this is good? Because then now I hope this thing can be performed if j is happening in my future. I can now have this correction depending on Si, as you will see. Okay, so this is the transferring equation. And there's another equation that I need to do, and you'll see in the proof, is that when I push this correction all the way to the beginning, it hits a plus, and it's nothing, so I can forget about it. So I won't have dependent preparation, because the preparation is first thing I can do. Okay, so the whole idea of theorem is just write this, actually, is it the next slide? The whole idea is that write this pattern in the first line. Don't be scared. This is really, really nicely behaved equation. You write this pattern that is impossible. It's mathematically correct to define it, but it's impossible to run it. And then I'm doing some usual stabilizer game, playing forward or backward, and I make it a pattern that is possible to run that pattern. Okay? Is there any question at this stage? Good. So let's do the game. So first thing, I know this projection plus alpha can be written as this measurement and this anachronical correction, bad correction in my language. Then I know that now I can pick up this bad correction and choose one of the entanglements, and this is where the flow comes to the picture. Why I know that there is a qubit that I can choose and I can transfer and I make sure this will be done is because of this function f. So pick up f, entanglement I and f of A. Then I do my transfer equation, and I'm getting this. So the red, the thing I'm writing in red is the where I'm doing my manipulation, okay? So I push this one, and this becomes a correction, which is good. Why is good? Remember, I said that f of I should be bigger than I. So if you read this partial order as the concept of future, past, and evolution, is that f of I will be happening in the future of I. So I can measure qubit I, and when I'm going to the position f of I, since in my future, I can apply the correction there. So now I'm happy with this correction. This is a possible correction because it's happening in the future. And carry on, and then you do the normal commuting rule of normalizing and clipboard. Because entanglement control Z belongs to the normalizer of Pauli, so I can commute this XFI all the beginning. But then here is bad, because now I have a dependent correction at right at the beginning of my computation. But then we are lucky, because I define my flow to go to a prepared qubit. So, you know, all the little thing that I put in the definition should be justified here. So their function was defined from measured qubit to prepared qubit. A prepared qubit is prepared in the state plus. So when this one is coming here, it's in the state plus, so I can forget about it, and this is the pattern. End of the proof, QED. So apart from this algebraic manipulation, let's see what's the intuition behind the proof. I've repeated already, but let's see. The intuition is that the transfer equation, the transfer equation means that this controls Z, converts and a bad Z correction, an anachronical Z correction at I, into a pair of future X corrections. So this ZI, SI, converted because of the entanglement to two future corrections. One of these future corrections all the way goes to the end, so I can perform it because I have this partial order, which is, if I want to use fancy word, sort of causal structure of my computation, so I can apply it. And the other one is goes all the way to the beginning, and I don't have a problem because that is a state plus, so I can ignore that. So now that the proof is very clear, let me give you another proof. Now I'm becoming mathematician, so I like to give you a proof. But the second proof is in the spirit of a stabilizer, so maybe for some people this one is actually even simpler. So you already saw that Hans described that if you have a graph of state, then you can define this operator, which is the very property of the graph of state, that if you have an X at some position and you put a Z at all the neighboring of that, this operator acting on your EEG is not changing it, it's stabilizing it. So the only thing I did, I just put F of I, which doesn't matter, but this is the same flow. And I make it a dependent stabilizer. Meaning what? Meaning that if whatever reason somebody tells you this value of SI is zero, so this is just identity. Identity acting like a graph of state is a graph of state. But if it's not, it's one, so you're really applying the stabilizer. Remember, applying the stabilizer over a graph is not changing your stabilizer. Okay, so here's the Pac-Man dilemma. So I have my Pac-Man, which is going to do a measurement here, okay? This Pac-Man, when it's eating this qubit, it creates two branches, okay? It creates two branches, and I want to make sure that these two branches are coming back together. And the way to do that is saying that, okay, let's see the flow. The flow was in like assigning there. And then put your stabilizer on there. So stabilizer means put an X here, and a Z on all its neighbor, okay? Z on all its neighbor. And also a Z here. And that Z which is coming here is going to take care of the two branches together. So that's all the idea of the proof. You pick your qubit. Whenever you do a measurement, the stabilizer and one of the qubits which is connected to you making the computation going through. And now, well, is that enough? Yes, of course, if you can do this manipulation, it's correct. But the only extra condition that we put, that when you're doing this thing, this partial order guarantees that this ordering of this dependency is not a runnable ordering. It's an acceptable ordering. So what do I want to say? Now there's a special case. So this is the funny. So first thing we show you was this one. And then you're happy. You go to like, okay, now I have all the pattern to be deterministic. And then you go to Hans' paper, and they have this pattern that they are deterministic. They're implementing an initial operator, and they don't have flow. And then we were really, really angry and upset, and you're not understanding what's going on. And what's going on is a very special case of Y measurement. Okay? So the flow that I defined can be extended to have this particular case. And this Y measurement has a funny property. If you're measuring a qubit with the Y measurement, X correction is the same as Z correction. Okay? This is just a property of Y measurement. So what does it mean? It means that when I want to pick up a qubit to apply my stabilizer to correct my thing, I don't need to pick a qubit which is on the next of mine. I can apply it in there. More precisely, it means that I can have loop in my definition of the flow. So if I already showed you that this graph doesn't have a flow, Because what Victor Dalloway said, that you need to pick up a qubit which isn't the connected to you. But if you're doing the measurement in rice, and this is now becoming a bit more restricted, you can let that to be looped there. And now this graph has a flow and is implemented deterministic computation. And this solves. And so up to today, we haven't found any pattern which is implementing a deterministic computation and doesn't have a flow. But unfortunately, we haven't proved the reverse of the theorem. Okay, which I think is true, but you know, the lack of the effort to try to prove it. So perhaps some version, or maybe we need to do a bit of extension playing with that one, is that if you have a flow, you have deterministic computation, this is done. If you have a deterministic computation measuring a flow, then somehow there is a flow there. Because this flow is nothing except dependency structure, it's nothing except the way that you run in this one. So if your computation carries that. So just to, there is another nice property that you can promise, but again, remember that circuit model has a nice property that I'm running a, I give you a circuit, which is implementing you. We know that if I just run the circuit backward, that's implement a joint of that U. And this is a very useful tool in the circuit model, because we can just, whenever you want, clean the garbage and all of that. And since I want to design all the tools that is necessary for an algorithm, it would be nice that I give you a pattern. I don't know what is this pattern is implementing, but I want to make sure that I can write directly the adjoint of this pattern. And again, that will come out of the flow. So how does it come out? So imagine that the graph not only has a flow, it has biflow. It means that the moment that I swap the position of input and output, then this one also has a flow, very simple notion. So if I take these two qubits to input, these two qubits to be output, this is the flow. By the way, this is a graph which is implementing control U. It's not important. So this goes there and this goes there. And now if I define these two qubits to be input and these two qubits to be output, this one also has a flow. So the graph has a biflow. If the graph has a biflow, then you can show this theorem that if you pick up geometry GIO, which has a biflow, then and implement some CP map, first of all, that CP map is unitary. If you have a biflow, then you are forced to implement unitary. And just by swapping output to input, which is like a relabeling of your pattern, implementing the adjoint of the operator. Let me show you an example of this one, and then I'll show you the proof, okay? So the example of this one, remember the pattern of Hadamard pattern that I show you? So you have prepared the second qubit, which is your output qubit in the state class, entangle, measure the first one, correct the second one. And this is a pattern which the graph corresponding to that is this. I'm doing the style of Howard, so maybe very, very big qubits. Okay, and this has flow. So this is my input, this is my output. Okay? So this graph has a flow, but not only has a flow, it has biflow. Because this is like a trivial example, but you get the idea. Okay, so now if I have the first pattern, and I don't want to compute to see what is it computing, okay? I want directly write the adjoint of that. Well, just swap the position of two, which is output to become input, and one, which is input to become output. You rewrite it. So this is now N1, 1, 2, M2, X1. And it's nice because this is after enabling is nothing except the Hadamard. And Hadamard is self-adjoint, so we shouldn't have been surprised because Hadamard is a self-adjoint. So the same pattern is implementing that one. Or for a more interesting one, this J alpha that also Richard mentioned that he did the gate which is implementing 1-1 e to the I alpha, e to the minus I alpha. You're doing it, again, has a biflow, so you're swapping it, and this is the adjoint of that one. So here, I'm slightly going out of my model, but it's not a big deal because now I'm actually letting to have general preparation. All the thing I've been talking till now is like plus preparation, but having plus alpha preparation is nothing. It's just, still the one-way model and all of the theory goes through. Okay, so let me just quickly show you why this adjoint theorem is true, and basically that's it. So when you look at one of the branches of your computation, this branch that I'm looking at, what are you doing? You're doing a bunch of preparation, which is like, let's say that plus alpha preparation, you're preparing your qubit. Then you're doing a unitary operator, which is your control Z. And then you're doing projection, which is plus beta projection of that one. So now, a nice little notation is that preparation and projection are the adjoint of each other, okay? Preparation of plus alpha is the adjoint of projecting to plus alpha. So if I now swap the position of input output, so first I'm doing adjoint of this operator, which is preparation. Then unitary operator is self-adjoint, because control Z. And the adjoint of preparation, which is the projection. And that's what the input output is doing. So you go from the pattern which was implementing the operator to the adjoint of the operator. So in summary, what I've been looking at is that graphs with flow. This little features with flow has a nice operator, nice property. The property is that the choice of angles are not important for your determinism. So we somehow we see that determinism is not in the way that I'm changing the angle, is in the structure of your graph, except when I'm having loop. If I need to have the loop, then that measurement should be y. But if there is no need to have this loop flow, then the angle is independent. Then they have a nice sort of abstract operator that if you compose them, the graph still has a flow. If you have a graph with flow, composition of them still have a flow. And I don't think I write it there, but you can implement all the universal sets of gates with the graph with the flow. So basically, I can look at always doing my computation within this category, the category of the set of graphs with flow. They are closed under tensoring and composing. They are implementing all the universal gate that I want. And they are nice because I can show determinism directly. And for the graph which also have biflow, then you can also write directly the adjoint pattern. And another thing is from the computation, it's enough just to compute the positive branch because it's deterministic. So somehow I'm giving, if the moment you have a flow, you're changing the measurement-based model to a projection-based model. So these are all property of this graph with flow. And I guess that's it, so I can go to the further direction. So now we have this thing, so what are the other open question within this direction? Well, the first thing that is now, you see that like all the three equations that I show you for the proof, this transferring equation, this poly, and this hitting to the beginning, they seem to be have a very special property of control Z and X and Z, but it's not. Maybe this can be more abstract. So we want to pick up this element N, E, M, C, which are the ingredient of the model, and try to define the most abstract property that you can have. So one property is that, E should be in the normalizer of C. That's one condition that we know it should be there, no matter of what it is, and that's what Richard also mentioned. But what is other property of the set of measurements that you can pick up, and such that you have the flow, okay? So that would be interesting, and it can be also go towards that, like, getting the different invariant variation of the model, sort of generalizing that model. So, like, particular within that picture, we want to kind of extend and have this local complementation operator over the flow. The idea is that, like, if I have a graph which has a flow, and I know the local complementation give me another graph which is equivalent to that graph, but could it be that suddenly now I don't have a flow there, and vice versa? So I have a graph which I want to do the computation with it, but it doesn't have a flow, so I'm not sure if it's a deterministic computation. But I'm performing my local complementation, and suddenly the new graph might have a flow or might not. So this is nice to study that what is happening to the flow under the operator of local complementation. The converse of theorem, so it's there. This is, we need to prove it if it's correct. And if it's not correct, it's interesting, because this is one of the good choices that you can support both cases. If it's not correct, then you have a special graph that you can still do computation with them, deterministic computation, but they don't have this trivial flow structure. And I believe those comes to this picture that I'm just briefly mentioning is like some sort of blind quantum computing and information security, because the idea is, I mean, again, it's something you're working on that is like, in the graph is that you have a nice property. I'm giving an entangled state to you, but I don't give you the graph structure of that entangled state. So within this Alice Bob picture, Bob getting a multi-qubit entangled state, but doesn't have a graph. And now the question is that, can I make force Bob to do a computation without letting him ever know the structure of the graph. And it might be that I just enough to give him the flow. I give the flow so he can run this computation deterministically, but he will never able to learn enough information. Oh, you don't look at me like that. I'm not improving this. I feel like it might be some direction to that. So in that direction. And there is also a notion of fault tolerance. Is that the graph with flow, somehow the angle of measurement is not important for determinism. So you little bit of coming out of the angle is still deterministic. But then there is position that you need to do Y measurement to computation to be deterministic. So it might be also connection there. I don't know. And then hence, I would like to have to be able to have the full characterization of graph with flow and without the flow. And the last thing is this one step towards that. Well, idea that we want to find computational fast quantum algorithms which are directly designed for measurement-based model. So now having this flow is a nice tool. So because I'm just first finding the flow and try it based on the flow design property for them. So that's it. And these are the references. Thank you very much. Okay, so what I'm trying to say is that if all the measurement that you're doing is just a normal measurement, okay, finding the flow, what I'm trying to say, how do I say this better? So first, the way I define the flow, I said like you always need to pick up a neighbor to that, and then you apply the stabilizer there, okay? And sometimes you cannot do that, okay? Sometimes you don't have any choice, like the graph that I show you, that you don't have enough space to that. But then, if you are willing to compromise instead of doing an arbitrary measurement, just do X or Y measurement, then you can do a little trick which lets you to do the flow. So you see, so X, Y measurement sort of lets you to play for the cases that you don't have this very general flow, and it's like make it in a, some sort of a local thing. Well, yeah, you're right. You can, you could have think it here. Yeah, exactly. That's a very nice way. So I could have also think that I have a graph state. First, I'm removing all this polynomial measurement with this operator that Hans also showed us. So I have this new graph state which doesn't have any polynomial measurement. And then I want to find a flow there. And finding a flow there, I could have seen it. I shouldn't have, I didn't need to apply this local compression because I could have put a flow. Yeah, there must be connection with it. Well, this is how I could be working with Simone and Vincent right now. I think he should be there, but it's, well, again, intuitively should be the case, okay? But in the mathematical manipulation, we're playing it. It shouldn't be so hard. I agree that I would have wished that it wouldn't be the case, that I pick up a graph here, it doesn't have a flow, and I said, okay, so let me transfer it to some under local computation, and then I get the graph now has a flow and I can do the computation. So I don't have the proof that you're asking, but. Okay. Okay. Well, well, we still need to work on those structures. But definitely, that's one of the questions that I put here, is just to bring this local complementation to the picture. see what they're doing. I don't know if you've seen it, but it seems that the structure of this one, it should be sort of like a matching, a particular type of matching, and if it's just the graph is too colorable, it should be easy to find them. But I don't have a precise notion of that. And my hope is that it's not an exponentially hard thing to find a flow. So first you give me a graph, then I should be finding. But I don't know what is the exact complexity of finding the flow. Hopefully it's not very hard, because this is like the first step that we want to write the algorithm on top of that.
Any more questions? If not, let's thank Kel Hamm again.